7. I want to describe what the sort of course of the evening is going to be to those who are in attendance or listening in from a distance. We're going to have a brief work session on committee rules. We're going to go to an informational meeting then on actually, we're going to go directly to the public hearing on Senate Bill 505 after that, and which will start with an informational presentation by some invited witnesses to describe that bill, and then we'll begin hearing public testimony. We have a lot of people who have signed up, and just as a forewarning, I don't think it's physically possible for us to conclude all that public testimony this evening. So if you're signed up further down the list, you probably ought to watch that to see where you are, to see what the probability is of your being able to testify this evening. This will not be the only public hearing on this bill. There will be other opportunities to testify. I would urge you in your remarks to focus on the bill before us, Senate Bill 505, and if you have other more general comments about Measure 37 or the other issues coming before the committee, those might better be set over till a later hearing, because there will be other hearings on other work that we do as a committee.
Cool.
And we will be once again taking witnesses who traveled from a distance. First we'll go to those people who are carryover from the last hearing who didn't get a chance to testify. Then we'll go to the people who traveled this evening from a distance, that is more than 100 miles, and then start going in order of sign up through the list that we have. So with that, I will open a work session of the committee. At the first meeting we held 2 weeks ago, we adopted rules that did not provide for minority reports, and that action was based on the understanding that the rules of joint policy committees of the legislature have consistently not provided for minority reports, because a joint committee is typically appointed where there's a need for expedited action on a matter of pressing concern. We later learned that the history is not entirely consistent on this point. Sometimes minority reports have been permitted and sometimes they have not been. To assure that the Committee on Land Use Fairness is not open to any criticism for unfairness in the way it does its own work, we have invited an amendment to the committee rules to permit minority reports. These have been developed in response to the particular needs of this committee process and should not be regarded as necessarily setting a precedent as to how other joint policy committees would deal with this matter. So with that, Senator Beyer, would you like to move an adoption of the amendment to the committee rules?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that the committee adopt the amended rules. I'm going to identify them by saying draft number 2 submitted by Senator Beyer. I don't see a date on them, so I'll just identify them in that manner, I guess.
Senator Beyer has moved the adoption of the committee rules that are on 3 pages that you have been circulated to you that show deletions in the margin and insertions underlined. Is there any discussion of the motion? Representative Roblin.
Thank you. From my perspective, I was one of those people in the last session that got to deal with minority reports and got involved with that, and I think that it's one of those things about fairness. My concern is this issue is so important from my perspective that if we can't all work together to come to a solution that's great for Oregon, I think it's going to be sad. And so the use of minority reports, and I think people know a little bit about them, is something that I would hope as a committee we continue to work towards finding the solutions that can help and work for all of us, and that we don't just try to move without coming to some of those kinds of things. When I looked at the makeup of this committee, I saw a lot of people who were dedicated to trying to find some of those solutions. And so I get a little concerned because I worry that this will be a way for us to move and not come to those agreements, because people can always have their other idea. But I understand this one. I believe in the fairness, and I look forward to voting for the motion. So,
okay, Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the motion, I would appreciate the committee co-chairs to be willing to work with me on this issue. We've obviously gone around and around and around for the last 2 weeks trying to come up with some language that is agreeable to everyone. To the issue that raised by Representative Roblund, I would say that this probably to me demonstrates more of ability to work together and willingness to work together, and actually helps bring both sides together, because if there's an opportunity for a minority report that may be something closer to the middle, I think both sides will be you know, working together. And I think that's demonstrated by the fact that as we researched this issue for the past 10 years, five regular sessions, I'm going to stress regular sessions of the legislature, there have been minority reports allowed for the committees, and but they have not been used. So, and there have been some very contentious issues in those committees that have dealt with, specifically the they call it the SR2 committee in 99 and 97. It was dealing with the creation of OWEB and the salmon recovery plan. And those were very contentious issues, and the rules were never tested as to the effectiveness of the minority report. So I think it's an important tool to bring both sides closer together.
Okay, any further discussion of the motion? Hearing none, then the clerk will call the roll. Those who are in favor of the change in the rules should say aye. Those who oppose the change in the rules should say no.
Senator Beyer?
Aye.
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative
Gerard?
Aye.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Rowland?
Aye.
Senator Greer?
Excused.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Aye. The amendment to the rules is adopted, and I will close the work session then on the committee rules and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 505. And we'll start out with invited testimony from Lane Shetterly of the Department of Lands Conservation and Development and Richard Whitman of the Department of Justice.
Thank you, Chair, members of the Joint Committee. For the record, Wayne Shirley, Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. We were invited by the chairs this evening to begin your deliberations on Senate Bill 505 with something of an expanded report, something you would get typically from Mr. Brennan, staff report on the bill. I think chairs were interested in a little further detail, perhaps, in the contents of the bill. And so we are pleased to be here tonight to walk you through the bill, to explain its provisions and answer any questions you may have about it, to set a foundation, I think, for the hearings that will follow. So with that, I think if I may, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to Richard Whitman and let him start the walkthrough, and then either of us will be happy to answer questions, I think, as you go.
Very good. Mr. Whitman.
Thank you, Lane. For the record, Richard Whitman, Oregon Department of Justice. Good evening, Co-Chair McPherson and Co-Chair Pozanski, members of the committee. I'm going to walk you through the provisions of SB 505. It shouldn't take too long because it's a fairly simple bill. The bill has two main substantive parts, and those parts appear in Sections 1 and 2 of the bill. Section 1 of the bill, SB 505, creates what has been called an express line. It essentially creates a set of requirements that if people meet those requirements, they are able to continue on under Measure 37 as it exists now with essentially no change. The idea is that people who fall into that category shouldn't be delayed in moving forward on their rights under Measure 37. I'm going to come back and talk about the requirements in a little bit more detail in just a sec. The second part of the bill puts a temporary hold until the later of sine die or June 30th, 2007 on a series of things under Measure 37. And I'll come back and talk in more detail about exactly what is put on hold under Section 2 of the bill. So those are the main parts of the bill. It's got a temporary hold part, and that it's got essentially an exception to that, which allows people who meet the requirements for the exception to continue on. So let me get into the details of how one meets the requirements to keep going under Measure 37 as it exists now. The first requirement is that in order to keep going, the Measure 37 claim, the use that the person desires to carry out of their property would be for an additional dwelling on their property. So if there is no dwelling on the property currently, and they want to put a dwelling on the property, they could keep going. If they have a home on their property right now and they want to put an additional home on it, they could keep going. There's another aspect of this, which is if there already is a home on the property and they want to put an additional one on, then this bill would also allow those claims to go forward, including the right to divide off the part of the property containing the new home. The next requirement for the express line is that the property in question under the Measure 37 claim has to be rural. It has to be outside what's called an acknowledged urban growth boundary. So we're not talking about property within cities or within urban growth boundaries. The third requirement is one that should seem pretty self-evident. It's that the claimant actually be the owner of the property. And in 95% of the cases, that's true. The claimant is the owner of the property, but we have seen some claims where the state determines that the person filing the claim doesn't actually own the property. And then the fourth requirement is one of the core elements, really, of Measure 37, and this just continues that. The person has to have had the right to that additional dwelling at the time they acquired the property. And then finally, the final requirement is that in order to qualify for this express line, the claimant would have to provide a release of any other Measure 37 claim that they might have against local or state government. The purpose of that is to make sure that people don't have more than one bite at the apple, so to speak. So those are the qualifications for the express line. Folks who don't meet those qualifications would be subject to Section 2 of the bill. And Section 2 of the bill, again, puts a hold on certain things until the earlier of June 30th of this year or sine die. So what's put on hold? First of all, you've heard testimony, the committee's already heard testimony from local government and also from Mr. Shetterly about the large volume of claims that came in at the end of last year. So the first thing that would be put on hold for this period would be the 180-day period under Measure 37 for acting on a written demand for compensation. That means, to explain that just a little bit more, that means if somebody has filed a written demand, it's pending with local government or pending with the state, it would be put on hold during this period. And if nothing else is done, the clock would start to run again on June 30th or sine die, whichever comes earlier. The second thing that the temporary hold would be placed on is new court cases under Measure 37. That would also include new cases, although we haven't seen too many of them, new cases challenging actions in the Land Use Board of Appeals. The third thing that's put on hold is a provision of Measure 37 that says that if somebody makes a written demand for compensation and the land use regulations that the claim is based on continue to apply to the property 2 years after the claim accrues, we don't know what that means exactly still, that the property owner would then be able to do whatever they could have done at the time they acquired the property. This is the so-called blanket waiver part of Measure 37. So we're putting a temporary hold on that provision also. Then, in terms of folks, the next group of things apply to folks who have already received their so-called waivers from local government and from state government. And again, there are about 2,000 claimants that fall into that category. The temporary hold would also prohibit people from filing land use applications for a permit to carry out those uses during this period. And for the relatively few who already have a land use permit to carry out the use based on a Measure 37 waiver, this temporary hold would also apply to their ability to actually start carrying out that use. So to give you a specific example, if somebody has Measure 37 waivers, they've gone to the county and they've gotten a subdivision approval, and they've actually gone and gotten building permits to start building the subdivision, but they haven't yet started building, this would put a hold on that during this period as well. With one exception, if those individuals had obtained a building permit before January 1 of this year, then they would be allowed to go forward. There is one other exception to the hold, and that is the litigation that has already been filed under Measure 37. We would, this bill would allow that litigation to go forward. So the 140-odd cases that are pending involving the state, and the we don't know exactly how many pending involving just local government, those cases could continue to be litigated during this period. That, unless I've forgotten something, Lane, that those are the main parts of the bill.
One thing, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I might add, well, Richard's finding it because I think we should address that, and that is the effect of the death of an individual claimant during this period, both as to claimants whose claims will be going forward for the development of one additional dwelling, as well as claimants whose claims are would be placed on hold pending either sine die or June 30th. The bill does include provisions for the death of an individual claimant and what happens to that individual claimant's rights in that event.
So this is Section 3 of the SB 505, and the intent here was to, let me back up a little bit. Everybody knows that there is controversy under Measure 37 concerning whether or not the rights that are afforded under the measure are transferable or not. And the state has taken the position that they are not. That's been upheld in a couple of trial court decisions. There's still a lot of disagreement and uncertainty about that. The intent with this Section 3 was to make sure that persons who, if somebody passes away during this four-month period of a timeout, that they aren't disadvantaged, essentially, by that occurring. And the way that that is done is that the heirs or devisees, whoever would inherit the property that's at issue in the claim, would step into the shoes of the claimant. So if the claimant acquired the property in 1955, before there were any land use regulations, and the claimant, obviously in that case, would be elderly, and the claimant were to pass away, then this bill provides that the heirs of the claimant would step into the shoes of the claimant, would have that same acquisition date for purposes of rights under Measure 37, and could go forward with the Measure 37 claim with that acquisition date. Now, that said, this section does not address the issue of transferability beyond that very limited manner. So whether the son or daughter of the claimant who passes away could then sell the property with those Measure 37 rights, this doesn't attempt to answer that question. That's a broader question that I'm sure will be one of the questions that this committee considers. This is just a very limited, narrowly tailored provision to make sure that this temporary hold doesn't change the status quo.
And one other thing, if I may, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's not really part of the bill, but so you know, the intent also would be that my department and counties, I assume as well, would continue to process claims even during this period while claims may be on hold. That would be our expectation, that we would continue to move those forward, not being able to look into the crystal ball and predict what the outcome may be by sine die or June 30th, recognizing that the bill as written would start the clock again on that day. We would be moving forward processing claims. Now, we would prioritize those claims that fall under Section 1. So the first thing we would do would be to go through the inbox and identify claims that qualify for Section 1, that is the one additional dwelling, and we would move those first. But then to the extent that there are additional claims to be processing, we would do that even while this period, while the hold may be in effect as to other aspects of the claims. One other thing that also is not in the bill, but that is certainly contemplated, is that a claimant who may have filed a claim seeking a waiver to allow multiple dwellings, but did so perhaps speculatively or just to maximize whatever their rights may be under the measure in the event that their claim is successful, would be permitted to amend their claim down to the one additional dwelling. It would be their option to do so if they were in the if they fell under Section 2 and their claims were on hold, but they were satisfied that one additional dwelling was sufficient for them and wanted to be able to go forward with the provisions that are made in Section 1. This bill would allow them to do that. And then we would continue to process those claims once they're amended, just as other claims that would initially be seeking one additional dwelling. And also, claimants who may have already obtained a claim waiver for more than one dwelling would be able, under the with the waiver provisions that are in here, now we're using waivers of waivers, but would be able to implement their development with one dwelling and exempt themselves from that timeout if they were to take that, if you consider it something of an off-ramp for that one additional dwelling. I think, other than that, and thank you. We didn't rehearse this. The one other thing I would say, I've mentioned it before, I'll flag it now for the record, that in the event there is no legislative action by sine die or June 30, so that we go live again on June 30 with the clock ticking, I will say at that point we will still need additional time to continue to get through the bulge of claims that are in the pipeline. But I commit to you that we will continue to process those at full speed ahead to make that remaining set of claims as small as possible by June 30, and we would know at that time, have a better sense just how much time we would need in addition to complete the processing of any claims that may be going forward after that date. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think that pretty well covers the overview of the bill. I know you've got a lot of folks to hear from. We'd be happy to answer any questions, however you want to do this.
Representative Garrard.
Lane, I'm just a little confused during this moratorium period. You indicated you would continue to process, but you would reach no final decision on any claims or just those that were expressed?
Thank you for giving me the chance to clarify, Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard. We would continue to process for claims that are seeking or that are amended to seek one additional dwelling. We would issue final orders on those. For claims that would be fall under Section 2 for the period on hold, we would process those claims to a final order. We wouldn't issue the final order so that when we go live, this is very much what happened when the measure was on hold during the appeal of the McPherson decision in the Supreme Court. We continued to process, knowing that it was likely or very possible that we would go live again on a date in the future, and not wanting to be caught off guard, we processed claims then, and we would do it this way as well, to a final order, and we would just hold those to be issued then as soon as we go live again, if that's what occurs.
Thank you.
Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had questions about the ramifications, especially under the Corey decisions and others, about the additional litigation, which I see as huge, by the way, if there's even a temporary moratorium on people who have rights or claims. So I made a request to one of the law firms that has a number of these claims and asked for their opinion, which I'm more than willing to supply to you. Good. From my view, we at least have a large number of lawsuits that will come out of a piece of legislation that puts any kind of moratorium on it. What's your view of the legal ramifications of passing a moratorium on a bill that people have certain vested rights in?
Co-Chair McPherson, Senator George, the letter that you're referring to is a short letter that asserts that the decision in Corey holds that there is a property right, which it then implies means that the legislature can't affect that right, the right to a waiver, without there also being a right to compensation. And this is an issue that we spent a fair amount of time looking at over the last few days, and we're still continuing to look at it, so I don't have any final answers for you tonight. But I will tell you that preliminarily it appears to us that the decision in Corey holds that there is a right to a hearing before a decision is made to limit or restrict or deny a waiver after an initial determination that somebody had a right to a waiver. That is under the due process clause of the federal constitution. It's a right to procedural due process. The case law is quite clear that in the legislative context there is no the right to procedural due process is met by the legislative process itself, and so that under the federal constitution we don't believe there's any impairment in terms of the legislature's ability to consider this legislation. The other question is whether there's an impairment under the takings clause of either the federal constitution or the state constitution, which I think is probably what the letter is alluding to. And in that context, there is a long line of cases under in the Oregon courts holding that a governmental authorization to carry out a particular use, such as a permit or a zone change or even a statute, does not create a right that cannot be altered by a legislative body until that right vests. And it does not vest until somebody has taken that authorization, in this case a waiver, and gotten the permits necessary to carry out the use, and actually commenced that use. So as I have alluded to, I think a week ago, to this committee, and again, this is preliminary, we're still continuing to look at it, it appears to us that there is no impediment under either the federal or the state constitution to this legislation.
May?
I just encourage, perhaps, as this review goes forward, that the committee consider getting a fiscal on this started right away, since we're going to be going forward. If I could, Lane, I'd like to ask you a question based on a conversation you and I had in my office. And I did some quick math, and I'm trying, as you know, I'm close with a lot of the counties. I talked to a lot of the county planning departments, and I'm trying to understand a process difference between the way the counties are processing these claims and the way the state is processing these claims. Based on the number of people that you've got working on these claims, the number of claims that are left to do, and the number of man hours you have, and you've requested 18 months, that works out to somewhere, if I do my math correctly, about 100 man hours per claim to process the claims at 18 months. And I'm finding that that's completely inconsistent with what's happened at the county level, where they're processing them within a few. I mean, it's as the process that I've been walked through with county planning departments, the time to process a claim is taking them a fairly small amount of time once they have the process up to check the deed date, the claim request, the county code, and then find the approval. I'm trying to figure out how it's possible that you're coming up with 100 hours plus per claim to process from this point forward, 100 man hours per claim.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, a couple things on that. First, we've done a we've had inquiry about that from Legislative Fiscal, and I can get you a copy of the analysis that shows the breakdown of the time extension on that. I don't know the math in my head, so I don't want to agree or disagree with your numbers, but we've done the numbers, and I'll get that to you, and I'll provide copies to the full committee as well, for that matter. As to the process, I think what I would say about it is, first of all, at the state level, it's a little bit more complex, perhaps, than in most counties, where in the state, at the state process, the claims come into the Department of Administrative Services as claims for compensation against the state. DAS does the intake. It identifies the property owner. It contacts then each of the 36 counties. Now, we're dealing with 36 counties instead of one. Contacts each of the 36 counties to identify the property owners who are adjacent to that in order to send them notice of the claim, giving them opportunity to submit written comments. We have to do the title search as well to determine the ownership. Department of Justice is involved in that. My staff is involved, of course, in the technical review on the planning side of it. And I guess what I can tell you is it is surprising the complexity involved in these claims. What I also can tell you, I think, with fairness, is that some counties are less rigorous, some counties are as rigorous. It's a mixture among the counties. We take the processing of the claims very seriously. They seek to be relieved from certain laws, recognizing that a waiver is only of particular laws, and we need to be careful that we're not varying from what Measure 37 provides. Also recognizing that there's a high degree of litigation that's involved, and so we work very closely in each claim with the Department of Justice. The fact that, again, the reason we need to be very careful with our waiver decisions is that a waiver is not only a benefit potentially to the property owner, but also implicates other property owners and even communities in the vicinity of the claim. And all of that we take very seriously and, frankly, have done a process that we think is responsible in carrying out the law, and would do it in an efficient way. I'll get you those numbers, and I'm happy to do that. I just don't have them off the top of my head.
If I could, follow-up question. Lane, I guess talking even counties that have been overwhelmed, as we said, the just the sheer difference in the time commitment it's taking to counties to do the very same complex and what it is taking to do have your staff with the amount of people you have to do the same job, and they've already done the research before they've sent it to you, I guess I'm getting concerned of the appearance that there is a willingness to work with the public on implementation of Measure 37. So if you could please, if you could give me something on this, I'd really appreciate it, because if my math is correct, and I just did rough math, so there's the sheer number of hours to get through a fairly simple number of claims and with stuff that's already been done by the counties. If maybe we can coordinate with the counties better, because they're already doing a lot of this research before it comes to you guys, they're way ahead of you guys, get that into your hands. It'd be really helpful.
Senator George, I think with this has been responded. We've got a lot of people in the room here, and so I'd like to be able to move along here. I think that the question's been posed.
Maybe Mr. Shetterly can get you the information.
Yeah, I'll get it offline. We've done it.
Point of information, Mr. Chair.
Senator
George might not have been here when Clackamas County testified about the claims process. I don't want misinformation to go out accidentally. And it is an extremely complex process, even at the county level, to process these claims. Clackamas County, most of their claims come in on the back of a napkin or very little information. Almost all the work in terms of finding out who actually owns the property, what the rules were at the time to figure out what's going on. And I would consider the process in Clackamas County not very rigorous, but it takes thousands and thousands of hours to do this. They're not even recouping the cost. We heard testimony that the fee is not even, we have a fee. Maybe half the people don't pay the fee. There's no requirement for them to pay a fee. And it's taken them 2 years to process 450 claims, and they've got another 600 claims to do in the remaining 6 months or whatever it is of the timeline that's currently allotted. So it is an extremely complex process in my county, which I think has spent a lot of time and effort on this. I know personally, is having a great deal of trouble. So I just think maybe in some counties it's a slam dunk. If you're Harney County, you got one claim, it's probably pretty easy to get it done in 2 years or 180 days. But when you got 1,000-plus claims in my county, it is not easy. It is extremely complex and takes a lot of time.
Any further questions? Senator Beyer.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions for the witness, but I'd like to comment on Senator Schrader is he said most of the claims come in back in napkins. I asked that question specifically, and a very few claims come in that way. Most people use the forms provided by the county. I asked that.
Which is like a bigger napkin.
But anyway.
It's one page.
Mr. Whitman, you first said that it was June 30th, 2007, or sine die, whichever comes later. And then you said it's June 30th or sine die, whichever comes earlier. I just want to make sure I read the bill. I know what it says. I want to make sure the record is correct.
Co-Chair McPherson, Senator Beyer, thank you for the opportunity to correct what was an apparent misstatement on my part. It's the earlier of the two.
One more, Chair.
Name?
I don't remember if it was you or Lane that said in Section 1 of the bill that in order to qualify for that single dwelling and a single tract, the person must first have to prove ownership. Yeah. And the question would be, what happens if the state determines one thing and the local government determines another thing on ownership?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I think what happens then is what happens now when that happens, and that may result in a challenge by the claimant to the adverse decision. And we find that. I would say that in most of our cases, our decisions are in sync with the counties, but there are occasional issues, either factual or sometimes legal issues, where a particular county or some counties have taken a different track than we have that result in different outcomes. And in that case, then, those are among the cases that end up in litigation.
Mr. Chair, follow-up. This bill does not allow litigation until sine die or June 30th, whichever comes first.
If I may, Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Beyer, the technical answer to your question is the way the bill is drafted, it requires that both the state and the county determine that the claimant is the owner. So if they don't both determine that the claimant is the owner, they don't qualify for the express line.
Okay. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple quick questions because I really do want to hear the public. I know large overflow population. Lane, I just wanted to know on the estimates we've heard in terms of, you know, $4.5 million in the governor's recommended budget to expand 16 positions to get us to 18 months. If we pass this bill, does that $4.5 million go away, or do we still at least have that to process even the express lane?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clem, I think the best way to answer that is until we know what happens between now and June 30 or sine die, we probably don't know what the budget for the next planning would look like. I think that the decisions that this committee makes to do something, to do nothing, will have an impact on our budget, and I fully expect that that's an aspect of our budget. We'll probably await some final decision, assuming you enact this bill. I think that's the best I can offer. If I may, I want to just go back to Senator Beyer's question, too, Mr. Chair. The timeout on litigation only applies to those claims that are in the second part of the bill on hold. It does not apply to claims in the first part for single dwelling. So if it's a single dwelling claim and there's a disagreement over ownership, this bill would not preclude litigation over those claims.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just on that last question, the hydraulic is such that depending on what decisions we make, you know, if certain people go into the express lane and those get processed in the next 6 months, that maybe doesn't go away. If we don't deal with the other folks in any other way besides what we're currently going to do, that number plus a lot more potentially to move timelines in. So there's a hydraulic that this committee can affect how much tax dollars essentially the processing is going to be.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clem, I think that's an accurate description.
Okay, thank you. One more, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
And then the contested case issue, the lawsuit that came back the other day, didn't a judge essentially say not only are we fine with the process we've used, we think maybe the state needed to do a little more potentially in contested case. So to the question of is your process taking too many hours, it sounds like a judge said it maybe should take more hours. Is that an accurate?
Yes. Co-Chair McPherson, Representative Clem, the holding of the Court of Appeals, which is not a final appellate judgment yet, is that the state is required to hold or to offer at least a contested case hearing on these claims. So if we're in a position where we have to offer contested cases on 4,000 pending claims,
There are some serious fiscal consequences of that.
And Mr. Chair, just a quick follow-up, if I might. Every other question I have, could someone come see me in my office? Yeah. That was all I wanted to say.
We have a lot of members of the public who are signed up, and we can't possibly hear from all of them, but we want to get going with them. So I would say if there's something you really need to get out there.
If I could just clarify, I think we wouldn't anticipate 4,000 contested case hearings. The hearings would fall into those cases where we've made a determination to waive, but we've granted a waiver that is not as extensive as the claimant has requested. Then we would have to offer the contested case hearing. The claimant would have to request the hearing. I think, you know, that's probably close to half of the claims. We've not run those numbers. It's close to half of those. So, I mean, it's still a significant number, but it's not every case that would be. If it's an outright denial under the Corey decision, they're not entitled to a hearing. And if it's a waiver that gives them everything they're asking for, then there's no hearing either. It's those cases where they've obtained a waiver, but we've given them something that's less extensive. That's a very significant plurality of the claims, but it's not the total number that's in the queue.
And only triggered by the landowner.
That's correct.
If those are all the questions, committee, then thank you, Mr. Shetterly. Mr. Whitman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I let you know I'm due in Medford before bed tonight, and if I may, I'll be excused, and I'll be back anytime.
We appreciate your making the time available to us.
Pleased to do it. I'm glad to do it. Thank you.
We'll now move on to the public testimony part of the evening, and as I indicated earlier, we'll be taking the witnesses in the first, starting with those people who had not been, we hadn't gotten to in the last hearing, and I'm going to call those names so that we, out of our experience before, is that maybe some of those haven't come back. And taking the panels of three, just to give you a sort of indication of time, we're scheduled until 7 p.m., and we hope to wrap things up as soon after that as we can. So as you can see, we're probably not going to be able to hear this evening from everybody who would like to be heard, but there will be other opportunities to offer testimony.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Garrard.
Are we hearing just 505, or are we hearing?
We are in a public hearing on Senate Bill 505.
That's what
thank
I thought.
You for asking that question. And I would urge those people who have more general comments about Measure 37 that this is really not the hearing for that. This is we're focusing in on a particular proposal that is temporary in its impacts in order to facilitate our dealing with the crush of claims that has come forward in recent months. So,
sure.
And we are asking all witnesses to hold to 2 minutes. So we do have a timer here, and we'll be urging them to wrap up as promptly as they can at that point.
Mr. Chair, I just want to say for those that are here, if you have general comments or if you want to actually give testimony on 505 and you can't stay here or be back for the next public hearing, which is scheduled for next Tuesday, feel free to write it down, email it, however you can get it to us. The record is open, and it will be received. We did receive a stack today of a number of them, so don't think that you can't, if you don't get up in front of the podium, that you have not, you don't have a way to express yourself. So whatever works for you to accommodate your testimony, we want to get it. Thank you.
Okay, the first three names I have are Robert Snellcall, Mary Hogan, and Renee Callahan. And are any of those people present? Okay, and the next three after that would be Gary Owens, Peter Kelly, Tim Thompson. And after that, Jerry Bossiter, Matt Dunkel.
Mr. Chair, are we doing the 100 miles sort of now?
We're going first to the names of the people who were carried over, and then we'll go to the 100 miles after that.
Thank you.
They might be in the overflow.
And they could be in the overflow room, and that's why we're going kind of going down the list. Could you identify who it is that's coming forward then?
I'm Mary Holman.
Okay. Okay. And you, sir?
Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Thompson. Okay. Very good. Let's get another seat filled here. I mentioned Jerry Bossiter, Matt Dunkel, Eric Holton, Gary Johnson. Why don't we start out with you, and maybe if some of those people are coming in from the overflow room, they'll appear.
Well, first of all, I'm somewhat confused because I did sign up on Tuesday, and at that time we were speaking about Measure 37.
All right. And so I would offer you the opportunity to comment on Senate Bill 505, which is but part of our
of our issues here. But I would say, if you have for those who are a carryover from the other evening, feel free to offer your more general comments. But I would urge those who are here then who this evening for the first time to restrict their remarks to the Senate Bill 505.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. And first, I'll try to make my comments brief. But I am a landowner.
You need to give us your name, please.
My name is Mary Holton.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm a landowner, and I am a farm wife. I've been a farmer ever since I married my husband. And I love my farm. But the farm does not pay its own way. If I were wealthy, I would develop my farm. I would make it beautiful. I would have secret places for the critters that live there. And I would have a beautiful estate, like many of my neighbors do. And I'd have big gates and a gorgeous home, but I don't. I have a very small house on my farm, and I have raised my children on my farm. My husband and I have had this land for 32 years without being able to subdivide it until Measure 37 was passed. In 2004, my husband became very ill and disabled, but land planning rules would not allow even his own son to build a house on the property to come and help me and care for him and assist me on the farm. Now my husband is deceased, and Measure 37 has been passed, but I am still waiting for the right to have my son come and help me on my farm. I have been approved for a Measure 37 claim both at the state and county level, reclaiming my original landowner's rights as the measure provided. I have taken steps required by Measure 37 to come toward the division of my land, planning to provide a home site for my son and additional 2 home sites. I have invested a lot of money and time in the project, believing that the will of the people would be honored. But now the governor has submitted a bill on the fast track that will virtually shut me down. And all of the other people who have trusted and the voters' decision and worked within the framework of that measure. Now, he's saying, if I build one house on my land for my son, then I would have to waive any other Measure 37 rights. Sounds like blackmail to me.
Ms. Holden, we're at the 2 minutes at this point, so
oh
if we could wrap up quickly.
Okay. First of all, I'd just like to say that it's been said that developers would come in and ruin the land, and I've been a landowner for years. I would do what is best for the land and honor my neighbors and make it beautiful, and I plan to continue to live there. And so I would urge you, please, don't suspend Measure 37. Don't pass Senate Bill 505.
Thank you, Ms. Holton. Mr. Thompson.
Yes. Committee Chair, committee members, my name is Timothy J. Thompson. I'm a full-time farmer. I'm a fourth-generation farmer. Our farm is about 10 miles east of Salem, and it's currently registered with the state of Oregon as a Century Farm. And we're a small family farm. What I mean by that is it's from the 400 to 600 acre capacity, part owned, part leased ground. And there's 2 Measure 37 claims, one on either side of me. And it's going to be a very difficult, we have enough regulations, and then dealing with multiple housing, these claims are basically 2 subdivisions on each side of me, 1 to 2 acre lots on fairly large parcels. So it's going to have an extreme effect on my operation. And the fifth generation, the senior at Oregon State, wanting to come back to continue on with our farm. And since the hearing tonight is on Senate Bill 505, I would urge you that this would be a good bill to temporarily put things on hold to where we can, you as a committee and those involved, can take a hard look at what this is going to do to rural, predominantly farming area where these houses are just out in the middle of nowhere. And I appreciate your time.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Thompson.
And I'd gotten down on this next page. I'd gone through the names Jerry Bossiter, Matt Dunkel, Eric Holton, Gary Johnson.
Some are coming.
Are some of those people coming in now?
Yep.
Yeah, come on up to the front here.
Tell us your name as you're coming up so we can check it off.
I'm Gary Johnson.
Matt Dunkel.
Matt Dunkel.
Okay. Okay, very good. Take those seats. And then just so people can be coming forward from the other room, Jan Boricott, Bob Vanderzanden, George Forsman, Russ Niehaus, Sam Sweeney, the names on the other page. Mr. Dunkel.
Hi, could permit to ask a question?
Well, we're hearing testimony, but if you have a question.
I was going to ask if the state would consider subbing out some of these Measure 37 claims, because I don't think it would take 100 hours to complete a review of claims.
Would you give us your name for the record, please?
Matt Dunkel.
Thank you, Mr. Dunkel.
I'm not in favor of Bill 505. I think that Measure 37, when it was passed by 61% of the voters at that time, they felt that if the government took value from you, took your rights away from you, that you were entitled to compensation. And none of that has changed. Bill 505 is an attempt to override the will of the voters, and landowners are entitled to their rights. The only thing I think that Measure 37 doesn't do is it doesn't go far enough. It doesn't give everyone their rights. I don't think this is going to be a temporary bill. It's going to be another stalling tactic, and in preparation for other measures to kill Measure 37 completely. One of the reasons for this frantic filings of Measure 37s lately has been the perception that the government will just do just this. I think of probably 80% of the people that have filed that I have talked to don't really want to do it. I am in the same position. I have a Measure 37 claim. I don't want to split my place up, but this is an opportunity that we may never get again, because our rights have been taken before, and I'm not encouraged that they won't be taken again. So the frenzy in all of this now is to try to get something done, I think. And this is the last gasp of Measure 37 claimants. There aren't any more after this.
And Mr. Dunkel, we're at past the 2 minutes, so if you could just summarize.
I would just urge that this bill not get passed.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Dunkel. Eric Holton?
Yeah. Thank you for having us here tonight. I feel privileged to be able to participate in this. I am the son of...
You need to state your name just for the record so it's on the tape.
Okay. My name's Eric Holton.
Thank you.
I live in Multnomah County, but I am the beneficiary, basically, of a Measure 37 claim, which my mother has in Yamhill County. I was raised on the farm that she lives on now. It's 130 acres total. 14 acres of that farm is farmland. The rest of it is not suitable for pasture. It's marginal timber. My father, who died 2 years ago, was a lover of the land. He was a farmer at heart. When land planning came along in 1973, I was 9 years old, but I remember that he actually welcomed it. He felt like he wanted to see good planning, good reasoning used in how the land was used in Oregon. But he became disappointed before too long, because they use a very broad brush to paint the maps that they use for land planning decisions. His 14 acres, yes, was good farm ground, and we farmed it, grew alfalfa cattle. The rest of the ground is view property, which he desired to sell off. Not small acreages, but acreages for homes to be built on you know, where people wanted to live in the country but not have livestock. In fact, he desired that there wouldn't be livestock in those areas because of the nature of the land. But what he found was that when he tried to do anything, there was no possibility of review. When he tried to talk to the people that he had, that he needed to work with to state his case for what he wanted to do, they wouldn't even go out and look at the property. So the thing that I think went wrong with land planning rules that we had in place starting in 1973 is, yeah, maybe it's a good idea to plan and carry out a plan in Oregon. But when the landowner has no say, you can't even use common sense. Show your property. There's no possibility for review. What kind of land planning is that?
Yeah, Mr. Holden, we're beyond the 2 minutes, so if you had any...
I just want to make one statement. I feel like Measure 37 is the only thing that's worked for my family. Now that it's come along, I want to urge you, as you look at solutions for the things that are coming up, please don't take us back to what we had under the land planning system. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holton. Next is Gary Johnson, and start by identifying yourself for the tape.
My name is Gary Johnson of Carlton. I'm a fourth-generator farmer. I've been asked to speak briefly on the current situation regarding Measure 37. I want you to understand, as a farmer caretaker of our land, not simply opponent to Measure 37 and its possible effects on our community. But you see this apple, this represents the earth. You cut this apple into 3/4. This represents all the oceans of the earth. You take this last quarter and you cut it, and this part represents the places on the earth where it's too rocky and wet, cold, and what have you, and also the cities, freeways, and parking lots and those areas. Then you take this last piece and cut it, and you cut it into, you know, 4 pieces. And that very last piece, when you peel the skin off of it, this represents all our arable, farmable land, which is only 5 feet deep. And this is what we have to raise our food products on. So out of this example, now we throw into the equation the conflicts of suburban expectation versus agriculture expectations. Many instances of conflicts have already been cited, and I can add several situations our farm personally has experienced. The bottom line is the need to preserve our greatest natural resource, fertile, farmable soils, and in resource industries it supports. Measure 37 is not reevaluated and revised to support a controlled, thoughtful method in edible growth will affect agriculture and its profitability and its future in Oregon.
And Mr. Johnson, that's over 2 minutes, so if you would wrap
and
up.
I urge you to go ahead and support Senate Bill 505.
Very good. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming back a second evening. We appreciate that. The other names I'd call from this first page were in this order were Jan Boricott, Bob Van Der Zanden, George Forsman. Are those people here?
Yeah, Alex Bucco.
I beg your pardon, Bucco. Jan Bucco, Bob Van Der Zanden, and
wherever you want to sit,
and George Forsman.
My husband didn't come tonight because he thought this was 37, and he signed up. Is he going to be able to speak later? Is he not going to be able to speak? Because it's very short and is mainly some questions as to the expense that might be caused as a result of passing Measure 37.
Ma'am, you should start by identifying yourself for the record.
I'm Jan Bucco.
Okay, I beg your pardon. But just to remind folks, this is a hearing on Senate Bill 505, but for those who came back, who wanted to testify the other evening, we'll be more expansive about what's appropriate testimony because we realize that you were set over from an earlier hearing that wasn't focused on Senate Bill 505. So please begin.
I'll just give the papers that we brought along from his, and you can pass this up.
We purchased our 44-acre farm 3 years ago. It is outside the urban growth boundary. The residence has been on the property since the 1880s and has first groundwater rights. It is located on a basalt base. The property is bordered on the upper hill side by a timber, which is one of the reasons we bought the property. The timber property has been logged and replanted. The owners of the timber property have filed 32 claims on 4,000 acres in Linn County to convert timber property to 5-acre parcels. The property above us has 159 acres, and it doesn't include another section over on Middle Ridge that is over a little bit farther. That's about 10 times the size of the property they filed here. And that would put approximately 22-plus homes above us. Our general concerns are as follows. Water availability. We're in a basalt aquifer, and we're concerned with the fact that, once that is reduced, it takes 2 to 3 years to replace the water. Homes in this area have stood vacant in the past due to lack of water. I've traced the lineage back to 1925, and it had stood vacant just before those owners were there, and they didn't have water, and it's happened several times since. Drainage. Anything that changes the landscape above us is going to have a direct effect on the drainage on our property. According to what we have read, drainage cannot be altered, increased, decreased, or diverted by the development. Septic systems going down to that basalt bedrock is going to run right down into our property because our property is the whole bottom below the timber property, and ruining our ground and surface water. It's going to have an effect on the wildlife habitat. There's major elk herd in the area, quail, pheasants, wild turkeys, Pacific chorus frogs, coyote, bald eagles, hawks, etc. These animals are going to move to the grass seed fields for food or eat livestock when their habitat is destroyed, affecting Oregon's economy. Increased traffic on our rural roads. There have been major accidents running into the back of farm equipment, competing with slow-moving farm equipment and killing wildlife. Impact on the environment.
Ms. Bucow, we're
getting close.
Okay.
We can't afford to wait until these homes are built to have this effect on our property. We're really glad that you are considering a moratorium on this bill. I voted yes on this measure, and I made a big mistake. I really understood that it was for families to avoid the issues of dividing their properties, for immediate family members to have and a chance to have part of those properties. Little did I know that it was going to extend to transfer of ownership to people who chose to take a timber property that doesn't even have a home on it and convert into subdivisions.
Thank you, Ms. Bucow.
And so I encourage you to continue the moratorium.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Bob Vanderzanden, please start by identifying yourself for the record.
Yes, sir. My name is Bob Vanderzanden, and I'd like to testify. I gave copies of my testimony, complete testimony. I will only just paraphrase a little bit of it because I know that it's a little out of place now since we're moving on to Senate Bill 505. I would support that passage of that bill because it's anything to slow down Measure 37 and hopefully make some changes in it, make good sense to me. My wife Crystal and I have farmed in Washington County. We began farming in 1969, and we continue to farm to this day. Before that, I farmed with my father, and now we farm with our son and daughter-in-law. We are primarily grass seed farmers. We have our home operation is just north of the Hillsborough Airport, between Hillsborough Airport and the Sunset Highway. I can assure you I have, over those years, had every opportunity to see the problems of the rural-urban interface. And Measure 37 and all its claims are only going to make it considerably worse. At least with planning under the laws that we have currently, they make sense. With Measure 37, you're just putting all those people out in our farmlands for causing us much more trouble. Secondly, we purchased land in 2002, hoping to move further away from urban development. We bought land in Bearboard, a small community north of Forest Grove, and now we are surrounded by Measure 37 claims there. And so the Measure 37 is unfair to other landowners, not just, not to those who are no longer involved in it. Also, Measure 37 is unfair in its application. The idea that the landowner can choose his value and the state then accepts that, to me, is foolhardy and needs to be changed in its application. I have some suggestions concerning a fix that you might be interested in, some ways that can be applied, and some reactions. In summary, I would like to encourage that you folks, as our legislature, have the, are the final arbiter on this, and you need to take action to make Measure 37 fair for all of the citizens of Oregon, not those who fit in a special group. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Van der Zanden. George Forsman is next, but before you begin, let me call some other names so people can be on deck. Russ Niehaus, Sam Sweeney, Bob Janzer, I think. I'm going to be reading that wrong. Charles Noble, Susan Hitz. Okay, Mr. Forsman.
My name is George Forsman. I own 20 acres, 3 miles to the east of Canby, 20 miles south of Portland. Bought the farm back in 1966. I had 60 acres, bought another 31 acres in 71. All that land was unzoned farmland, 68 to Clackamas County, turned around and rezoned the 60-acre farm to RA1, rural agricultural, 1 acre minimum. They did 4 square miles of this on Canby. And then in 1979, actually it was in 74, the state took away my RA1 rights, gave me 20 acres minimum. 79, the county tried to take the impose EFU 40, which means I could not subdivide my property, the 60 acres. And as a consequence, the average lot size back in 1979 was 10.2 acres per lot. And here, and I was the only one going to be affected by EFU 40. I ask you many things about the fairness of what you people are evaluating, and one of them is under Senate Bill 100, we were supposed to be compensated for adverse zoning. We were not compensated. We were supposed to protect the prime farmland. We have not protected the prime farmland. What we did is we rezoned the prime farmland. We only had 1 million acres of prime farmland back in 1969, and we're down to 500,000 acres of the prime farmland because it's all being built into the cities. The marginal farmland, which I own, which is almost swampland and can hardly get a building permit for, is now being classified as EFU, which is ridiculous. I mean, there is no planning process at all. And I bought an orange grove in Florida, and that darn thing out there, hey, I was told I could build a house on 40 acres, because I did buy a 40-acre grove. And I found out the land was already platted out 25 years ago into 5-acre lots, and there's no house within my property within a mile. And I just bring this thing, and all I'm saying on the fairness part of it is I think the...
Mr. Forsman, we're beyond the 2 minutes, so...
Okay, I'm going to switch now to say that I'm against Measure 505. I believe the fact that there's been too much stalling by the state and the county and doing this thing, and all it would do is enhance their ability to stall and possibly get rid of Measure 37.
Thank you, Mr. Forsman, and thank you, the three of you, for coming back a second evening. We appreciate you coming out. We have Russ Niehaus, Sam Sweeney, Bob Janzer, I'm guessing. Could you come forward, please? And who are, and I'm sorry, and which of those are you?
I'm Russ Niehaus.
Russ Niehaus, very good. Is Sam Sweeney coming forward? And Bob Janzer, then Charles Noble, Susan Hitz. And who are you, sir? Yeah, why don't you go ahead and take a seat? And then starting in the next list, we'll be looking for Andrew Stamp. Not sure I can read that one. Higgins, maybe. Somebody Higgins. Okay. In any event, Mr. Niehaus.
For the record, I'm Russ Niehaus. I live in Portland. And I wish to extend my appreciation to you gentlemen, each one of you, for providing the electorate with an opportunity to express their concerns about Measure 37. I also want to disclose that I'm a retired lawyer, and I now have a real estate broker's license after practicing law for 48 years. I also like to represent that I am the broker for two families. One family has filed a claim covering 25 acres, and another family has filed a claim for 35 acres. And Both claims have been filed in Clackamas County. And frankly, in listening Tuesday evening, I'm afraid that most folks don't realize that filing a Measure 37 and getting an approval is only one step in a very long process. A longer process is to get the permit and to comply with the rules and regulations safety and health. My experience is that it'll take longer than 6 months for anybody, once they get an approval, to be able to build or proceed with a project. It'll take much longer than 6 months. The problems are, of course, are roads, the fire, the necessity to have a road for access to fire, health, no
Mr. Niehaus, we're over 2 minutes, so if you could come bring to a close, that would be helpful.
Okay. I am opposed to Rule 505. There is sufficient time for the various pending claims that have been filed and to be handled, and even if there's an approval, there's no way that anybody can get a permit and move a piece of dirt within 6 months.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Niehaus.
You.
Mr. Sweeney.
My name is Sam Sweeney. I live at Dayton, Oregon. Mr. Chair and committee members, I really appreciate this chance to testify. My family is a part of a third-generation farm family, farming Yamhill County, wide variety of crops. And we are concerned about Measure 37 and the effects and all the reasons you've heard before, which I won't elaborate on. But just to say, tell a little bit about what we're facing. We got a subdivision plan to the west of us. We got one to the south of us. And down not too far from us to the east of us, there's a chicken operation. And then there's a planned subdivision on 60 acres, and then there's another chicken operation, which I think is just really ludicrous, and I can't imagine how they're going to get along. But anyway, the two things that I'm really concerned about is the magnitude of the claims that have been filed. And I have a map here of Yamhill County. Everything in dark is Measure 37 claims. It represents about 35,000 acres or over 50 four square miles. My concern is that when eventually, if these are all filed upon, it's really going to impact Oregon agriculture and affect the state and county's economies. I'm also concerned, and I know there's some question about the transferability of rights, but if they were transferable, I can foresee that this could continue on for maybe a century or more. It leaves all farm families in a state of limbo as to how do we plan. My son is farming with me, and I hope at some point that it will be such that my grandson can too. But when you look at all the subdivisions that are planned or could happen around you, it's kind of hard to plan ahead. So it's just really not good. I just first heard the bill 505 tonight, and you know, just from a cursory kind of a study of it as I was listening to it, it sounds to me like it's a step in the right direction, and I urge you to really strongly consider it.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Sweeney. I'd called earlier Bob Janzer and Charles Noble, and Susan Hitz. If she could come forward. And then next names are Andrew Stamp, looks like Higgins, somebody named, I can't read the first name, and then Barbara Wilson, Ramona Tracy, Don Dutton. Are any of those names, if they could be, we'll start hearing from Ms. Hitz, and if those others could come forward if they're within earshot.
Well, actually, my husband Ludwig Hitz is supposed to be here with me. He's in the building somewhere.
But why don't you go forward, since you're the name on the list, Ms. Hitz, why don't you go ahead and present your testimony.
I just got my granddaughter. My name is Susan Hitz, HITZ. I am a senior citizen. I am a farm wife. It's my understanding that I do have the right to
appeal under Measure 37 to subdivide our property. But quite frankly, I don't think myself is such a self-centered person as to have no regard or respect for future generations. If we continue to allow Measure 37 to subdivide farmland, we will eventually find out a lot more than the English did with their Industrial Revolution, when all the farmers went to town and they ended up having to buy their food from foreign countries. The foreigners found out they didn't have any food at home, and guess what happened to the prices? We're already feeling that here. We're already eating a lot of foreign food. This is not necessary, but if we don't protect our farmland, it will continue. By adding other houses into the area, we are having more septic drainage, which affects the groundwater, it affects the quality of water, it also affects the water available for farm use. The sprays drift onto adjacent properties. People from urban areas don't understand that, they don't tolerate it, they shut down farms. I know farmers who've had to move out and gone bankrupt because of claims from people who moved from the city, did not know what they were getting into, and wanted to continue to live the same way they did in the city, out in the country. This is not Little House on the Prairie land. This is agribusiness. It is a business situation which protects every single citizen in the state of Oregon. If we continue to allow people to put their own self-interest first and avoid all of the land use planning that we've done so many years of work on, we are going to end up being a bankrupt state.
And Ms. Hitz, if you could wrap it up here at this point.
Measure 505 tries to put a stopgap. It doesn't go far enough. Unless you are legitimately farming, you don't belong in the country. Pure and simple.
Thank you, Ms. Hitz. And ma'am, which name are you?
I'm Barbara Wilson, and I live in Beaverton.
Okay,
this lady said everything I was going to say. I do think that Measure 37 caters to self-centered interests. I am a suburban dweller, and I feel like I'm a hapless bystander while Measure 37 claims are being filed, and yet my taxes will go to pay for the processing of these claims, and I object. If Measure 37 was going to go on the ballot, it should have included funding for all of the expenses involved in Measure 37. I'm also concerned about who's supposed to pay infrastructure. We have, I don't know how many thousands of claims in Washington County, but I figure people like me who have lived in Beaverton for 40 years are going to be asked to put in new roads, new water lines, new sewer lines out to far-flung subdivisions which are placed in the farming community. I participated in citizens' committees in the 1970s for land use planning, and I have participated vigorously in statewide planning goals for Goal 5 and Goal 8 primarily. I believe in land use planning. I believe in economic development that's orderly, not chaotic. I believe in a high environmental quality, and Measure 37 brings destruction. Senate Bill 505 is okay as far as it goes, but it doesn't go far enough. But I beg you, please give us an extension of the 180 days that government agencies have now to process these claims. It's not enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hitz and Ms. Wilson, and thank you for coming back a second evening and to get your remarks on the record. The last two names from the last Thursday list that I had called were Ramona Tracy and Don Dutton. Are those people here in the room? Yeah, here we go.
Ramona Tracy, Clackamas County.
Go ahead.
My application for 37 did not come in on a napkin. What I have in front of me is my family started the trading post on the edge of my property in 1872. It's all written in hand script. I've kept that property and worked it myself for 30 years, my grandparents before me, their parents before them. I am a little confused on when you read Measure 37, you go back and it says the first family members. In the middle of 37, it says present owner. And that's never quite been explained how they jumped from one to the other. I would just like to know why. But I'd like you to keep in mind that most of your property owners take pride in their property. I love my property. Some are going to take the money and run, but not very many. Most plan to stay on the property, but actually need to divide some parcels off in order to build the home you're talking about. Transferability, in 1872, my family had the right to transfer ownership to whomever they chose and in any amount of acreage. If we'd been given our zoning, then...
Ms. Tracy, we're at 2 minutes, so if you could come to a close, it'd be helpful.
Where's the question of transferability? When 37 passed and the people started the process, a lot of organizations and individuals screamed discrimination because the person next door that had purchased their property 2 years before did not have the same right to buy their property. Now our governor has decided that just the people who want to build one home should be eligible. Now that's discrimination.
Thank you, Ms. Tracy. Ms. Dutton.
Yes, I'll go fast. I don't think I can do 2 minutes. Measure 37 has offered many of us the first glimmer of hope in nearly 3.5 decades of outright oppression. If you live in an EFU zone and are fully eligible for the erasure of that zoning, thanks to Measure 37, you are old. You are a senior citizen. The physical stamina to keep farming is gone. If you want to retire on your own land, it's likely that you need to sell some pieces of it to accomplish that. You had planned to when you bought it. For many of us, that is how we purchased our property in the first place. Likewise, we had planned to continue the tradition by farming and then partitioning. Measure 37 restored a dream, even though it has been an absolutely hellish 2 years of paperwork, meetings, and money at every turn. How does any government body take away property rights for over 3 decades without compensation and then get huffy when citizens overwhelmingly overturn such a grievous injustice through the democratic process? For 2 years, we claimants have jumped through every development hoop and paid every fee that has been demanded of us to achieve whatever partitioning we could obtain. Many people like us have borrowed money and paid professional persons to assist them in this very confusing and intimidating process. Now we are supposed to accept another timeout after the 5-month timeout created by Judge James. Even worse is the proposal to limit Measure 37 development to one house or one additional house on an eligible parcel. This could have been done at any time. We have our first house under construction, but have followed all of the county directions for the siting of that unit and the building of a roadway and the utilities layout to facilitate the two future houses as we were granted a three-way partition. We have incurred costs in excess of $40,000 beyond the cost of the first house that would not have been incurred if it had been the only house decided that we would be allowed at that time. Further, that house was situated to accommodate the other two instead of located where just one house would have been sited on 16 acres. We have development that Senate Bill 505 threatens to overturn, but my husband would like to know how we recover the money for
Ms. Dutton.
I'm almost done. And
okay.
It's totally 505. I'm sorry.
I've driven down here
two times.
I understand.
And why have a single house facing a worthless road up the middle of the 16 acres, 2 years into a law that people have responded to with their money and hours and days and weeks and months of effort, now is a ludicrous time to destroy it. This is rotten treatment of Oregon citizens who have tended their land for the past 30 to 60 years or more. People who have managed their lives and land
Excuse me, Ms. Dutton. I realize you have come back twice, but there are a lot of other people in this room who have come here this evening to be heard.
I'm almost...
Done. Let this process roll forward. Judge it by reality, not hyperbole. These are the lives of real people you are contemplating jerking around so arrogantly and repeatedly. Senate Bill 505 is abusive. Stop the assault and give fairness a chance. And lastly, I'm sorry, but everybody on both sides has a lot to say here, and it comes from the heart, and you're entitled. But you're comparing apples to oranges, and these things need to be decided case by case after the fact. An approval is nothing but an approval.
Thank you. Thank you for coming back twice. That concludes the list from the last hearing we held. So we're now moving on to the list of sign-ups for this evening. And we're going to start out with those who indicated that they live more than 100 miles. That is where our understanding is that they would have traveled more than 100 miles to come to this evening's meeting. So let me again indicate who those people are in the order in which they signed up. Dwayne Weeks, Bruce Meland, Colleen Fletch, those would be the first three. Are those three here in the room?
I'm in Vernon. I'm less than 100 miles.
I see. And which are you?
Dwayne Weeks.
I see. Okay. Okay, but we have Miss Fletch.
Fluch.
Fluch. We had in order before that, Mr. Meland. Okay, why don't you come forward? You'd be the first of those who had traveled more than 100 miles.
For the record, my name is Bruce Meland. I live in Deschutes County, just outside the urban growth boundary. I've gone through the Measure 37 process. I've gone through the petitioning process. I petitioned off two 2-acre parcels, leaving me with about a 5-acre parcel. The land is in junipers. It's rocky. It's ideal for residential development. I completed the whole petitioning process on the 1st of September of 2006. The question I have is, and this needs to be clarified, in this Senate bill that we're discussing, is there a difference between partitioning and subdivision? I noticed the people from LCDC only talked about subdivisions, only one parcel on a subdivision, but how about a partition, which is only two parcels? In my case, it's up for sale. Does this mean that I can only sell one parcel? The LCDC gentleman said that it's not transferable, but according to my counseling, it is, as long as you maintain part interest in the land until the house is built for the person. So these questions need to be addressed, the petitioning thing versus subdivision, and also the transferability. That has to be a part of this, I think, this Senate bill for consideration.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Meland. And next, Ms. Fluch, and then Bob Harris will be next after that.
My name is Colleen Fluch. Thank you for allowing me to come tonight. We have 175 acres zoned EFU in Douglas County. My mother has 80 acres also that is next to ours, and it's part of a tract of land that of about 1,200 acres that my grandfather purchased in the early 1940s. This land is mobile land, as I said. Suspending Measure 37 at this time would be tremendously unjust and unfair, especially to the elderly claimants. Mr. Kulongowski's suggestion do not address my mother's needs nor the majority
Thank
of
you.
The other elderly claimants, most of whom already have one home site on their property. My mother, who is very typical of other elderly claimants, is 83 years old and in frail health. She's lived a life of hardship that was directly related to the regulatory takings in early 1970s. Her parents and their children and grandchildren have all been adversely affected economically and otherwise for the last 40 years because of those rulings. Now my mother is living out the last few years of her life in a home on her property at or below poverty levels. If it were not for the help from her children, she could not survive. And this is directly due to those regulatory takings that robbed her of her retirement money. What she desperately needs right now, and I mean very soon, is to be able to sell a couple of 1 or 2-acre parcels that she has, so that she has enough money to live out the rest of her life in dignity. It is her desire to leave her land to her children and grandchildren. Had they been able to do this 40 years ago, the separation of the land and the orderly development would have been much better. But at this point, a lot of that land is gone because it's extremely hard to maintain that land. And frankly, she has more children now, grandchildren. And so she's asking to be able to divide that land to give some to her children and also to be able to sell some. My mother is not greedy, and I resent the comments that suggest that she is. She's only trying to address the wrongs that have been done to her family. She has the right to a fair and timely response to her Measure 37 claim, just the same as those who are asking for only one home site. Leave Measure 37 alone. She is not a developer. She's an old lady who needs money to live on and has a desire to provide for her descendants in a manor that is much reduced from
Ms.
what Rich, it would have been.
We are beyond the 2 minutes.
Okay.
Thank you.
If she would have left things the way they were 40 years ago. I would like to say that the administration should have seen this jolt of extra claims coming in. They should have seen that coming. I really feel like there should be no suspension, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Ms. Fluch. We have next in order, the over 100-mile travelers are Bob Harris, Walter Ponslerd, Gary Harris, Barry Martin, and Robert Velados. Are those people in the room or within earshot?
I think they're next door, Gregor.
Okay, let me give them a moment here to say these people traveled quite a ways. Let's get them in here. Okay, the first three from that list would be Bob Harris, Walter Ponslerd, and Gary Harris. And if you could come forward, if you're in the room, any of those three, just come up and take seats here at the witness table, and we'll take them in that order. Mr. Harris first. And start out by identifying yourself for the record.
Chair McPherson and fellow legislators, I'm Gary Harris from Central Oregon and Farming Matters. I provided a packet with you that's quite extensive. And it includes my bio on myself and my main concerns about what's happening in Central Oregon. There are all the claims that are currently in the packet. There's all the claims that are in Jefferson County. An example of subdivisions that are being approved in Jefferson County and matters, and a discussion and high value ag land figures and the high value soils that are in Jefferson County. I'm here to support the governor's proposal. And its urgency is dire. We've got Jefferson County commissions that are fast-tracking subdivisions without hearings, and we're going to end up with dirt road subdivisions in our ag land. Basically, the opportunities for subdivision and housings are a mass of abortions in Central Oregon. The City of Madras just approved 1,300 new home sites and 19 subdivisions in the City of Madras. The large-scale developments and destination resorts in Jefferson County are now being planned on 30,000 acres and an additional 21,000 home sites. Measure 37 is the Family Farm Destruction Act, and it's not the Conservation Act. It's going to ruin the Northern Irrigation District as we know it in Jefferson County, and you can see by the map that I have provided where those home sites are going to take place. I beg you as my fellow Republicans, because I've been a lifelong conservative fiscal Republican, that we do not have enough scarce public dollars to provide the infrastructure for subdivisions spread clear across the hinterlands. The other small bit I would like to say is that, remember, we have a law 215-243. It says preserve the maximum amount of a limited supply of ag land in large blocks necessary to maintain Oregon's ag economy. The ag economy in eastern Oregon is only 2-3% of the footprint. It's only 60,000 acres in Jefferson County, and it's a viable agriculture. Measure 37 was about providing Gene Preddy his one house, and we're doing that.
Mr. Harris, if you could wrap it up, that'd be helpful.
And it was about fairness, and fairness is not the opportunity for some vast rural landowner to continue to further his egg nest and get a windfall by putting in subdivisions. Governor McCall said in 73 at the Senate speech to stop the destination, the sagebrush subdivisions in Jefferson County. These subdivisions aren't sagebrush. They're high-value irrigated farmland, and it's a crisis. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Are you Mr. Ponsler?
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
I'm Walter. Is this on?
Yeah, you're fine.
Okay. I'm Walter Ponsford, past Jefferson County Commissioner. I'd like to compliment the governor for his attempt, and thank you for your time given this. I identify myself as an advocate for agriculture ground. I would like to point some things out to you very quickly here that really needs consideration. The first section here you mentioned where people with single home dwelling needs and so on is really an admirable start. I have been a strict land use planner, and I feel spanked because of 37. 37 goes too far. Let me point out something to you that's really super important. Since 1961, timber and farmland has been discounted its true value. For instance, $640 an acre is what our farmers are taxed on when it's $1,800 to $3,000 ground. It's done because of the farm economy and situation. It has to be that way. If you stop and consider that statewide, the cities and suburbs today are subsidizing at the rate of hundreds of millions of dollars. And since 1964, we're talking about billions. People living on the farm ground have not been cheated. They have been subsidized with good reasons. And you need to think about this. And I don't think the cities and suburbs wish to see the open ground go away. Anyway, it's really very important for you to understand no one has been cheated. It is not the land's fault that farm economy has suffered so badly. We have a federal government that needs to have different ag policy. Certainly, a lot of what needs to be done needs to take place at the federal level.
Ms. Proctor, for 2 minutes, if you could come to
a close. The other point I'd like to make is that this state is complete with literally hundreds, if not thousands, of past subdivisions developments in the state, and it's where our sheriffs go. Our sheriffs, our state law does not even require the sheriff to have a police force. People moving out into the country expect city services for no taxes. Who has to pay for it? Again, your suburbs and your cities. You talk about unfairness, you're looking directly at it. County government was not designed to be city government.
Thank you, Mr. Ponsberg.
Thank you for your time.
We have final three names who have indicated that they travel more than 100 miles, and those are Gary Harris, Barry Martin, and Robert Valados.
Yeah.
That was Gary Harris.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was Mr.
Gary Harris and Walter Penfield Ford.
Okay, so Barry Martin and Robert Valados. I thought that was Robert. Okay. And identify yourselves here. Who am I looking at here?
Burge Martin.
Burge Martin. I beg your pardon. Murdered your name. And we had. Did we hear from Gary Harris before? And I was.
Yes.
He was. I beg your pardon. And then we have Robert and Margaret Valados.
Robert Valadeo.
Valadeo. I beg your pardon. Okay, Burge, Mr. Martin.
You want me to stop?
Yes, please.
My name is Burge Martin. I'm 74 years old. I live in Bend, but I have property in Clackamas County. We bought 15 acres in 1973. At the time I purchased the property, it was zoned 1 acre. I thought it would be a very good nest egg for future, that when we are done with it, raising 4 children, that I could sell it and have a little bit money to enjoy in my retirement. So previous to Measure 37, a couple measures passed and shattered our dreams. But Measure 37 was godsend, and I think we should leave it alone. Governor is calling us greedy people. We are not greedy people. We just want our right. We made an investment. We have paid taxes on this property, and we want to reap the fruits. I heard some people are concerned about amount of water needed for those developments, sewer, and so forth. We have agencies in place at this time that monitor that. You're not going to be able to build houses where there is no sufficient water, or you are going to pollute the environment and so forth. Those places would have to be stopped and not allowed to be built. So there's no need of making a big to-do about those things. And by the way, Measure 37 affects less than 1% of the land we're talking about.
Yeah, Mr. Martin.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. We have now the Valadeos, and actually if one of you is a spokesperson for the household that or the family, that would be helpful.
I'm Bob Valadeo from Klamath County. I'm a cattle rancher. I'm here to protect agriculture and the land it needs. 37 was a big mistake. It wasn't properly representative on the ballot. They should have called it a ballot for development. Now, I've heard a lot of things tonight about people wanting to divide up their land and so forth. We are forgetting one thing. Agriculture feeds everyone in this room and in the country. Klamath County can produce enough potatoes for 11 million people alone, one county. As to say, I am against 37. Now, 505 is the closest thing to fixing 37. There is some mistakes in it, but I do encourage the legislature to pass this. They're saying we need to protect agriculture and the land we need. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Valadeo. And there's a little time left.
My name is Margaret Valadeo. I'm his daughter. I'm a recent graduate of Oregon State University, and I've always wanted to come back to agriculture and be a producer myself. But with Measure 37, that puts it in danger for me. Yes, I could pay. I can't pay what a developer could pay for land. So this hurts me. This hurts all of us. I am the future of agriculture, along with every other young person that wants to be in production agriculture. Right now, 505 is the best solution I can see. Put things at a hold. Look it over. Think about us, your future. Because without the future of agriculture, there will be no future for us. Agriculture is the basic industry of life.
Thank you, Ms. Valadeo. Okay, that concludes the testimony by those who have traveled more than 100 miles. And so we're going to start at the top of the list now. On the general list, and recognize we're getting very late in our hearing time, so we're only going to get a limited way through this, but we'll get as far as we can. First, we have Kathy Mager, Michael Gunn, and Brian McCann.
Mr. Chair? Just a procedural question. For folks that have already testified, when we have people that have not had a bite at the apple, are the fact that someone signed up twice, are you going to have them testify twice?
No. If somebody has already testified this evening, we would hope that we would expect to move on and to others who haven't had a chance to speak as yet. And so I would I think we've tried to identify those, but if I'd hope that people would if we've missed that identification, rely on an honor system to identify yourselves as already having had a chance to speak, because there are so many people who came to speak this evening who won't be able to.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Smith,
I asked the same question earlier, and you said that because we were in a public hearing on Senate Bill 505, we were going to allow them to testify once. And I think that's what Senator Johnson was asking.
Actually, I wasn't. I was just asking somebody who's already weighed in.
We should allocate the limited time as fairly as we can, we should do. Kathy Mager.
I'm Kathy Magar. I'm against Senate Bill 505. When Governor Kulongoski stated that the people who voted for Measure 37 were just a little too dumb to know what they were voting for, he was wrong in my case. I knew what I was voting for. All Measure 37 is a desperate attempt to keep 1,000 Friends of Oregon from taking all the common working person's rights to own property from them. I have a little worthless ravine that I can't even give to a very hard-working, modest little family in town to put a trailer or a little house on due to 1,000 Friends of Oregon and all the regulations. That's why I'm for Measure 37, because it gives me an opportunity to do that. I know it's not perfect, but nobody was doing anything. 1,000 Friends of Oregon are creating a society of rich folks in the country and poor working folks in the city. Governor Kulongoski is a Democrat, isn't he, for the poor working man? Maybe some people in the city would like to get out of town. Not everybody. Some people like city. But a little acre of a ravine, why can't they put a trailer on there? 1,000 Friends of Oregon are lying when they say they are protecting farmland. Huge retirement developments are covering the best farmland in this valley. And Measure 37 did not bring that about. So I'm against Senate Bill 505.
Thank you, Ms. Magar.
You're welcome.
Next, Michael Gunn.
That's me. Thank you. My name is Mike Gunn. I'm an attorney. I'm in Newburgh. My office represents various claimants. We have filed probably in the neighborhood of 45 or so claims. I have written materials on behalf of claimants that cannot be here tonight. We have numerous claimants that are here tonight to testify. Whether they'll get an opportunity tonight or carry over, that remains to be seen. I've done land use law for 20 plus years, and I'll be the first to admit land use law is very complicated. It is litigation driven primarily because of the ambiguity and the complication of a lot of it. And that's exactly why Measure 37 was passed by the voters, because it was the voters were fed up with land use law, where they couldn't do things with their land when they acquired it. And that's why Measure 37 passed. This Senate bill right here is being sold, I guess, as a no harm, no foul. All it's supposed to do is suspend things for 4.5 months. This is a disastrous bill from a voter citizen standpoint. I have to be honest with you. I think some of this stuff is a bait and switch tactic, and I hate using that terminology. This part about this single family dwelling, this one house, is throwing a bone out there at somebody, and that's a colloquialism. But I'm just saying that the purpose of that is not for the little old farmer. And we have a lot of elderly clients that have had these properties from the 40s, 50s, 60s that are infuriated by the fact they can't do with their property until Measure 37 what they could when they bought it. This single-family dwelling situation is an attempt to take people that have 10 or 20 units approved and get them to agree to put a single-family home on there and be required to release all their rights under any kind of Measure 37 claim for now and the future, regardless of what comes out of the legislature.
Mr. Gunn, we're at 2 minutes, so if you could wrap up.
Okay. Summarizing, all our clients are adamantly opposed to Senate Bill 505. I would urge you to not pass that. The whole reason behind what came out here was to try to give some kind of slack on this 180 days to continue the 180 days. If you want to do that and continue it for a reasonable period of time, 60, 90 days, etc., that's reasonable. But to basically gut Measure 37 and ask people to wait for 4.5 months, we've got clients that have spent $200,000 on development costs.
Mr. Gunn,
There's no provision for repaying them. What are they supposed to do in the interim?
Thank you. And you're Mr. McCann?
Yes, I am.
But before you start, let me indicate who's up next. We have after that Sam Eastman, Merlin LaJoy, and Dwayne Weeks. So if those could be ready to come forward. Mr. McCann.
My name is Brian McCann. I'm a resident of Gresham. I am also a licensed real estate professional. I'm here to speak about Senate Bill 505. I think it is wrong. I think that the first part of it, the suspension for a temporary time period, is a ploy at which the governor is trying to achieve the opportunity to have more time to process the claims that haven't been processed. And I understand that there may be that need, and I think that Senate Bill 505 does not properly address that need. If we need more time, that's one thing to process claims. To suspend all claims based on the fact that we need time to process other claims is definitely a smoke and mirrors attempt at veiling something else. Measure 37 passed because people were tired of not being able to use land and get the counties and the state to agree to reasonable action. Senate Bill 505 should have been designed to address the issue of how do we deal with this overabundance of late claims that came in, and not at trying to undermine Measure 37. Measure 37 was voted in 2 years ago. The Senate, the House, the governor had an opportunity then to realize that the people had spoken and that land use planning needed some rapid revision. This will not give you the time for rapid revision, and it is a little bit too late. It should have been acted on during that time period, especially when it was suspended, waiting for a Supreme Court ruling on whether or not it was constitutional. That's what I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. McCann. And the next three we have are Sam Eastman, Merlin LaJoy, and Dwayne Weeks. If they could come forward, please. First, Mr. Eastman. Which one? Sam Eastman, is that one of you?
Eastman.
Is that one of you Sam Eastman?
Right.
Okay, go ahead. Start by identifying yourself for the record.
My name is Sam Eastman. I'm retired. This property we're talking about was acquired in 71. There wasn't a whole bunch of garbage that you had to go along with at that time, but we was feeding 8 kids, and we didn't have the money to stick into something like this. Well, them kids is all raised up and on their own now. And we come along, and they said, well, it's time to get with it. And we did. And, well, I might be getting a little of this forward or backwards, but we approved Measure 7. And the court threw it out. So we said, okay. We waited. Along come 37, and it was approved. And now they're saying that, well, we want to tweak it a little more, change it all around. So the only thing I can with SB 505, the only thing I can see is SB 505, if it gets passed, then what, for the few that they've done good for, are they going to come and say, we want to tweak it a little more? And how long is this going to keep going on? So I'm entirely against SB 505. I think it's good for nobody at all.
Thank you, Mr. Eastman.
Yes,
Mr. LaJoy.
My name is Merlin LaJoy. I've got about 52 acres over outside of Newburgh. And we filed a Measure 37 claim, like so many people have here. And I'm not going to go into, I think the reasons we filed are like so many other people that have talked here. We had children that want to live on the property, that type of thing. But I kind of hear you saying we should be talking about 505 today. So I guess what really disturbs me is Measure 37 was voted on by an overwhelming majority of the people, and now you want to change it. And by Measure 37, there were some things wrong with it. There's no doubt about that. I don't know who wrote it, but SB 505, I mean, if you're intent on changing it, then I think you should go back to the drawing board and come up with something different, because 505 is poorly written and it's unfair. And I'm absolutely opposed to it. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Weeks.
Yes. I'm Dwayne Weeks from Canby.
And excuse me, but Mr. Weeks, before you start, why don't I identify the next panel? Florence, it starts with a G. Gestris or Gertner or something?
Oh, she's here.
She knows.
Okay. Pete Bucot and Roger Kay. Okay, yes. Mr. Weeks.
I should have given due honor. Thank you, honorable legislators, and my neighbor.
Dwayne.
I'm Dwayne Weeks from Canby,
Oregon.
He's
not an honorable legislator.
Mr. Weeks is... Senator Schrader, not an honorable legislator?
Yes.
Just a neighbor. Just a neighbor.
But we have 20 acres. It was a 20-acre farm we purchased in 1966. It had 15 acres of berries on it. And my family was young, and the wisdom of the state legislature and the Congress ruled out kids picking berries. Mm. And we lived close to town, and they used to walk out. Well, there went the berries. So I switched to nursery.
I like picking berries.
And raised rhododendrons. We raised 50,000 rhododendrons a year, shipped them all over the country. A couple gluts happened, and down the tank went the rhododendron business. So we leased the land to a neighboring nurseryman who grew big trees and spread them out over a long period of time. And I'm here to tell you, the rent does not pay any more than the real estate taxes. When we bought this property, we looked at it for a potential retirement when I got through working. I worked until I was 70, 71 years old. Now we want to sell. My wife is over here in a wheelchair with arthritis. I have a big farmhouse that's a bedrooms are upstairs. She can't get upstairs easily, and it's dangerous. We want to sell the place and move to town and get a one-story house. That's our retirement. When you're talking retirement, let's propose one other thing. To make the rest of the state feel how it is to have your retirement cut off. Take PERS and government workers and teachers and government workers and cut out PERS. You'll find out how it is to have retirement cut off.
Mr. Weeks, we're at 2 minutes at this point, so if you can wrap up.
Yeah, I want to get one through. We are approved, and we have an engineer working. We're $20,000 into this mess. We see another $30,000 into it under normal conditions. And we are, and we don't know when it's going to happen. We got to do it now, and I am totally against Senate Bill 505. I think the governor is insulting us when he calls us selfish and greedy, and I deeply resent it.
Thank you, Mr. Weeks. If we could have the next panel here, Florence, Mr. Bucot, and Roger Kay, and folks, we are at 7 o'clock, which is the posted conclusion of our hearing. We're going to continue for a few minutes here to try to get to hear from more people, but we're likely to be losing committee members here because of other commitments here. So at some point here, after a few minutes, we're not going to get to the whole list. We have a very long list here, but we'll get as far as we can within the time that people have available. Yes.
I'm Florence Gestrin. Thank you for being willing to listen to us tonight. I'm speaking on behalf of my mother, age 96. We were one of the first three approved by the state of Oregon for Measure 37, one of the first three approved by Columbia County. I'm here in frustration tonight. My mother's sitting in a nursing home tonight. We have $263 left in her savings account and 48 in mine. We need to divide the 116 acres of view property that's not being used for farming, that was put into land use regulation by the state with no input from us. We need to do it now. I need to be able to take care of my mother. I'm against this measure wholeheartedly that has come up, that is another ruse to slow down progression. I'm not selfish. If I was selfish, I wouldn't be trying to take care of my mother. Anybody that thinks I am, I would be more than happy if you would please come and stay with her during the 8 hours a day that I have to work to keep a roof over her head in an apartment. I would be more than happy. She's almost blind. She has to be in a wheelchair, and she's there alone, except when my son can be there for part of the time to help take care of her. We need action, and we need action now. I see that some of you on this committee last summer voiced opinions about the unfairness of eminent domain. We already have eminent domain. It's called Oregon land use laws that are unfair to our society and to our people that own property. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gestern. And I'm sorry, you were which person?
Roger Kay.
Roger Kay. Mr. Kay, I'll have you start in a moment, but let me get the next people on cue here. Bill Morris, Karen Wade, and Patsy Trivelpiece. Go ahead, Mr. Kay.
Thank you again for allowing me to speak, co-chair and members of this committee. My name is Roger Kay. I'm current president of Friends of Marion County. I testified before on the problems with Measure 37 in terms of water, groundwater, but I have a bold proposal I passed out to you this evening, and that's a tax relief proposal. And basically my proposal calls for again, we've heard many complaints from people who've already spent money on their claims and will lose all of that money if the legislature acted to repeal or suspend the measure. I'd like to propose that those claimants whose claims have cost them file, legal, and planning fees be eligible for Oregon State tax relief if the legislature repeals or suspends the measure. They could file amended returns for 2004-2005. Corporations already claim a tax deduction for business expense, a tax credit, would return all of their costs. For individual returns, a separate state tax form could be created. For those that don't have to file because they are low income or live out of state, a property tax deduction could provide the same relief. The state would then refund those payments to the counties. Credits would be carried forward to future years if they are not fully recovered the first year. If claimants passed away, the credit would pass to their heirs. For instance, in Marion County, the filing fee is $200. If that average fee is applied statewide at 7,000 claims, we're looking at $1.4 million. So I believe many claimants have not spent much more than that, although tonight you've heard from some claimants claiming, you know, $10,000 or $20,000, but that, I'm sure, is very rare at this stage of the claims process. And that was my suggestion. That's my proposal. So when you're looking at this 505 or Measure 37 reform and claimants complain about the loss of filing fees, I think this proposal might be able to resolve that issue.
Thank you, Mr. Any questions? Next three Thank names, you. As I mentioned, Bill Morris, Karen Wade, and Patsy Trivelpiece. Mr. Morris.
My name is Bill Morris. I acquired my property between 69 and 72. I participated in the land use planning in Oregon. I believe in it, but that was citizen-based, and the county set standards, and they were all approved. And I had the right to build on my property until, I believe it was 93, when the legislature changed the zoning over the counties and put the zoning that I am on at EFU 80 standards. So that took away my right to build on that property at that time. Measure 37 gave me back that right because my claim has been approved both by the state and the county. Now this bill would take that away again. and the multiple thousand dollars I've spent getting it back, which to me I shouldn't have had to spend in the first place, is now has a possibility of going for nothing. So I can start all over again. So I'm definitely against the bill that you have before you right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morris. Ms. Wade.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, I am here and I am not supporting House Bill 505.
Do you give us your name for the record?
Karen Wade.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I am responding to the partial in regards to agricultural property and one dwelling. As the paper is presented in front of you, there was some examples or questions about how many parcels per, how many dwellings per parcel, excuse me, and I have given you some examples on this paper. Leave Measure 37 as is, no moratorium, no additional house bills, it's too late, no suspensions. I see these offerings of benefits of Measure 37 as follows. We have designated the area where we live as agriculture, and I'm going to give you an example of 30 acres, what you could do with a 1.5-acre parcel, a 2-acre parcel, a 5-acre parcel. There are fines if newly developed property is not kept in agriculture. These fines have to be paid back with a 10-year period, not to be taken lightly. Benefits to the state by having these smaller parcels on 30 acres, you can increase more income base from these smaller parcels. They can become more diversified than the larger parcels or portions of crop production. For example, on a 1.5, you could have some organic growing. You could have fresh-cut flowers with roadside stands. You could have hydroponic growing. Less outlay of cash to smaller farmers and greater quality of product. The new owners of these smaller parcels, as described above, are likely to be already working individuals and can afford the cash to invest in farm activities, accept crop failure, and but yet continue on. This group of individuals can diversify these farming activities, are more likely to experience profitability.
Ms. Wade, could you wrap up at this
you
point?
You bet. Measure 37 is a win-win for Oregon and for agriculture. The future with agriculture is matching global marketing. We have to have diversification, and we have to stay financially stable. The present and future of Oregon is change, population growth, housing, and diversification. Keep Measure 37 as is. Be proactive, not fickle and wavering. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wade. And before, Ms. Triplepiece, before you begin, the next three names are Jim Todd, Gloria Gilbert, and Ollie Wilcox. Go ahead, Ms. Triplepiece.
Okay, my name is Patsy Triplepiece. I live out of Yamhill on a small farm. It's been in the Triplepiece family since 1942. My father-in-law died in 1963, and in 1966, my mother-in-law wanted to move to town, so we bought 10.5 acres from her. And in 75, we moved my mother there in a mobile home when she retired. And in the early 80s, my daughter and her husband moved there in a double wide. And in 92, my mother-in-law decided to she wanted to sell the rest of her property, so we bought it to build a new house on so our son could live in the old house. And after a lot of trouble, they made us combine the tax lots. And we thought, no problem, we could just separate it later and sell it to our son, which we haven't been able to do until Measure 37. And what we want to do is sell part to our daughter and part to our son, part of this 10.5 acres, because they're living there now, but they can't own it. And so I'm against Measure 505. I like Measure 37. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Triplepiece. The next three names again, Jim Todd, Gloria Gilbert, and Ollie Wilcox. Is Jim Todd within earshot? Then let's go to Ms. Gilbert.
Okay, I will. I agree this is about Senate Bill 505, and because Measure 37 has already been voted on, it was found constitutional, and basically...
Excuse me, ma'am, could you identify yourself for the record?
I'm Gloria Gilbert. Here Thank you. I will try to make this really quick because pretty much I'm going to give you the same story everybody else has had. My husband and I are filing a Measure 37 claim. We filed for a 10-lot subdivision, and we are just finally awaiting the final permits. We have 7 acres that were bought in 1973, and it was zoned for 30,000 square feet. On the back of the paper they're giving you, it shows how we sit in the middle of 30,000 square feet of subdivision. Over the years, we've tried to farm the land, and of course, we couldn't make any money on it. When my husband retired in 1998, we tried to rezone. We tried to subdivide, and we found out it had been rezoned to RRFF5. When Measure 37 became law, we paid the $750 fee to Clackamas County, and we met every single requirement. We did as they told us to do. We had to have geological studies. We spent all the money it took for the surveys, for the parking. We even have to build and widen the road with a bike lane that doesn't exist for miles. That's okay with us. We would not have proceeded if this law had not passed and we were told it was constitutional. We have mortgaged our home again. We have borrowed money. We have so much invested that if this measure is stopped, literally, we're looking at possibly bankruptcy, or we will be working until we're 100 to pay back all of the money. There is a lot of money involved in this, and there are good safeguards to this initiative. If the county and states are unable to meet the 180-day deadline because of the rush, then extend it. We would have been willing for ours to be extended when we filed at the very beginning. We're okay with that, and most people are. We understand the backlog and what it takes.
Ms. Gilbert, if you could come to
a
close.
Okay, suspending this is not going to help, and it's going to financially hurt a lot of people.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Gilbert.
Thank you.
Are you Ms. Wilcox?
My name is Ollie Wilcox.
But before you start, let me just identify the next three names. Edie Rickard, Dwayne Christie, and Ron Walhart.
Walbart?
I'm not sure how to read it, but go ahead, Ms. Wilcox.
I'm Ollie Wilcox. I live in Clackamas County. I've lived there for 50 years. We bought a piece of property in 65. My husband said that will be our retirement. Well, he's been gone now 14 years. I've tried Christmas trees, and that's over with. I tried raising cows, and it's 8 1/3 acres, so you know it isn't a great big farm. I have city water. I'm between two schools, walking distance, and I wanted to divide into four parcels. I've had my okay from the state and the county. I've already started with my surveyor. I've paid all my fees. And if 505 goes ahead, which I disapprove of, it puts me in a very serious bind. I'm 78 years old. I started this before Measure 37 started. Was voted in. 39 out of 41 neighbors agreed that it would be okay if I would divide my land. I'm not impacting my community. I'm not hurting anyone, but it will be help me to finish out my life and not be on the public dole as many old senior citizen people have to be. I want to be independent, and this is a democracy, folks. When 61% of the people speak, surely you all ought to know that it's a lot of people. We're not neither Democrat nor Republican. This is a bipartisan vote for the pleasure to do with what we need to do with what is rightly our own. And I thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Wilcox. We've got the next three names are Edie Rickard, Dwayne Christie, and Ron W. I may have butchered that last name before.
I'm Edie Rickard,
And my husband and I are opposed to House Bill or Senate Bill 505. Our property was deeded to my husband and me from his father in 1973. It has been used as a small woodlands lot ever since, and we received our marginal lands exemption and built our home in 1971. Both of us have lived in Oregon our entire lives, and the land is part of the property that my husband Dan grew up on. He helped his father farm portions of the property. However, our portion is too steep to farm. We are trying to split an approximately 8-acre piece into three parcels so our two children can build their homes here. As my husband's father passed the land on to us, we want to pass the land on to our children. They grew up here also. We resent the governor calling us developers. We have spent over $15,000 thus far on filing fees, survey costs, traffic study, and legal fees in an effort to comply with Measure 37 standards. We object to Senate Bill 505, and it is not honorable to take away our claim after we have spent so much of our time and money to pass our land to our children. We see our legislative members as representatives who are supposed to respect and honor the people's vote in all matters, including passing Measure 37. My husband and I have progressed in following all proper procedures in filing our claim after that was passed. It is not a greedy or selfish move on our part, as stated by Governor Kulongoski.
Thank you, Ms. Rickard. Very good. Mr. Christie.
Yes, Dwayne Christie. You talked about your big napkin. This is for my Measure 37 claim. Plus the expense of doing this so far is I've spent over $7,000 in this. My 37 claim was a claim and the situation, I know you want to know about 505, and it appears that 505 meets all my requirements, except I have to give up some of my rights that I don't think are proper. So I am opposed to 505. I acquired a piece of property in February 12th of 1978. That property was zoned AF5. It was 15 acres. And that the zoning was proper and everything. My occupation and my whole career has been an advocate for property owners' rights. I've been a real estate broker in Oregon for over 33 years. I've lived in Oregon all my life. I'm past president of the Oregon Association of Realtors, and I understand zoning, planning, taxation, assessment, and appraisal. I spent 16 years on the Washington County Board of Equalization, so I'm fairly knowledgeable in what's going on in real estate. And I'm embarrassed. I thought I covered myself when I bought this land. I divided it into two parcels, 8 acres and 6 acres, because I could divide it with three, and it was legally divided, properly zoned. And then I was concerned, so I went to the county, and I asked county council to give me a legal opinion saying I had two legal tax lots of record.
Mr.
And Christy, I have
if you
that.
Could wrap it up at this point.
I have that. My petition, I think there's no question if you read it, understand everything, it's going to get approved. So, but I'm not interested in the delay, and I think the delay is totally uncalled for and should not occur. So I'm in favor of ballot measure 37, and I'm opposed to 505.
One more, you think?
Yeah.
Okay. Before we go to this last one, let me identify what will be the last panel that we'll hear this evening are George Hansen, Dana Krupp, and Robert Bruchere. I beg your pardon. I'm sorry. George Hansen, then would be Scott McKillop and Dana Krupp would be the next three after that. Sir, if you could identify.
Mr. Chair.
I was there at John W.
Yeah. No, you're up anyway. You still go. I was just identifying the next panel that was going to come on after you three are.
The names of Walbank. W-A-L-B-A-N-K.
Walbank. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, before we get going, can I ask one question? Is it possible just to make sure that there's not another 100-mile person somewhere in the three rooms that didn't make it in?
I think it's a great suggestion, Representative
Flynn. That is on the list somewhere.
If anybody who traveled more than 100 miles to get here this evening, we certainly don't want to send anybody home who came at that kind of distance. So if there's anybody in that situation, by all means, let us know. Okay, Mr. Walbank.
Well, I can't complain about Measure 37. They passed all my stuff. All I had wanted was to divide 2.6 acres off the bottom end of my property, which had never been cleared.
Sir, even though I've called you by name, you need to identify yourself for the record.
I'm Ronald Walbank. And everything has gone pretty fair with Measure 37. But now comes 505, and I got a problem. And the biggest problem is, to be quite honest, is my freedom. They're taking it from me. They're throwing another obstacle in my way, and it's wrong, and somebody should pay attention to that 61%, because it's getting to be a dictatorship. We're being pushed and pushed and pushed. Every time you argue a little bit, it costs you $1,000. That's not right. The Planning Commission must be rich as could be. I've been helping the whole pile. That's all I got to say.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Walbank. The next three, and will be the last three this evening, are George Hansen, Scott McKillop, and Dana Krupp.
And somebody else.
I'm sorry? We are, that would take us through number 25 on the list out of a total sign-up of about... of 64, and
not counting yet last
but,
week.
But that's not counting the list that we heard from people who had come back a second time
from Tuesday. No. Yes.
Next Tuesday at 5:00.
Yes. Same time. 5:00.
Senator Johnson?
Mr. Chair, I have a constituent here who doesn't meet the 100-mile test but has come from St. Helens. It's 75 miles.
With the committee's indulgence, can we hear that from that TED witness as well? Okay. Mr. Hansen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is George Hansen. I live in Clackamas County, and... our family owns 43 acres, which we acquired in 1961, some 46 years ago. And we had planned on using this property as part of our retirement plan. And in reliance on Measure 37, which was passed to correct many past wrongs, as our property was downzoned four times without any notice to us. And we have now spent over $200,000, I've either spent it or committed to spend that sum of money to develop this property and professional fees and filing fees and whatever else Clackamas County has requested from me.
Thank you.
It has taken us 2 years to get this far, and any change in Measure 37 would further damage us, as you've heard from other people that have spoken here today. Measure 37 was a start, and the legislature should continue in an effort to fix these land use laws. I think that this legislature should disregard Senate Bill 505 and leave Measure 37 alone. Measure 505 is unfair on its face, and I believe that the legal opinion you heard from the Attorney General's representative today was wrong, and it's just going to foster bunch more litigation, and anyone that has acted in reliance on this law has a suit against the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. And ma'am, you are?
I'm Dana Krupp.
Dana Krupp.
And yes, we are somewhat related to Jeff.
Very good.
We'll try not to hold that.
Okay.
That's quite all right. Yeah.
Distantly.
Distance. Yes.
And you did say it right. I appreciate that. Senators and representatives of the state of Oregon, my name is Dana Krupp. I live at Harrisburg, about 20 miles north of Eugene. Our property in Linn County, Oregon, was owned by Marvin's parents, my husband Marvin's parents, Herman and Mildred Krupp, from 1937 until 1990, when we purchased it. Prior to 1937, it was owned by Marvin's maternal grandparents, Oscar and Viola Stewart. My husband Marvin is a native Oregonian. I'm from Virginia, but I've been here for 35-plus years. We've raised five kids here, and most of the time, I am proud to be an Oregonian, except when I see the garbage along the freeways and some of the garbage that comes out of the legislature. maybe I should rephrase that to the governor's office. I did focus more on Measure 37. I apologize. I didn't realize that it was taking the turn for 505, but I believe that, as some of these other people have spoken, yes, our agriculture is very, very important, and I am a farm girl at heart. I would like to see Measure 37 tweaked to make it right for the farmers and keep agriculture a very high priority here in Oregon. But those of us who own only 8.5 acres, what are we going to do with that? Let me go on. The total property that we own is surveyed at approximately 8.5 acres. Because of the configuration of the land and three septic systems, there are only 3.5 acres, 3.5 acres of tillable land. What would you do with 3.5 acres? Since it is zoned EFU, there's no way to make any kind of real kind of income from those 3.5 acres. However, if we are allowed to partition, we can substantially increase the value. Since 1990, there have been three home sites on this property, each with its own septic system and tax lot number. We have paid taxes on all three home sites for the last 15 years.
Ms. Krupp, if you could
I will certainly go on. Yes. We've spent about $3,800, including removal of an old home there, doing perk tests, et cetera. We object to Senate Bill 505 and think that it should be go back to Measure 37 and rework Measure 37 rather than just doing a stopgap with 505. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Krupp. Senator Johnson, could you identify your constituent who had traveled?
I can, Mr. Chair. She's just signaled by holding up her hand in the front row.
Very good. Come forward, please.
Hello. I'm Kathleen Warman from Warren, Oregon, and I came here today in support of Measure 37, although I don't have a dog in the fight. I don't have a Measure 37 claim. And if Senate Bill 505 is supposed to replace Measure 37, I hope not, but this one takes away too many rights to make it worth bothering with. But I do know Oregon's land use laws are like a bald tire with patches all over it. It's not working. It's not going anywhere. The laws are too onerous, and they take away too many rights from people. If they want to have a house on their land, that should be a use permitted outright, but it is not. So that's what I came to tell you all today. I didn't have anything planned. I just winged it. So thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. We appreciate your coming. And with apologies to everyone who signed up and came to testify this evening, we've run out of time. In fact, we ran half an hour beyond our appointed designated stop time because we wanted to hear as much testimony as we could. We will, at our next hearing on Tuesday on Senate Bill 505, we'll resume with take up first those people who come back who are on this evening's list. Thank you very much for your attendance, both committee members and the public. We are adjourned. It's